Now we're going to turn in our Bibles to the passage that Mike Bryant read for us a little earlier, the book of Psalms. I'm working my way through these Psalms, particularly in the morning service. Evening, as I say, we're going to be starting a series in the letter of Jude. But morning, I'm going to continue this series in Psalms, and we're looking this morning at Psalm 6. As I've said before, when we read the book of Psalms, these Psalms speak to us because these are records of men who have been through various experiences in their Christian lives. And they've written down their experiences, and we read their experiences, and we relate to them. And so there are Psalms of triumph when a child of God has been blessed of God and is meditating on the mercies of God and the grace of God. And so they write these wonderful psalms of how gracious and how good God is to his people. And we join in with that and we say, yes, that's my experience. And then there are psalms when a person says, well, I was going through difficult trials and God came to my rescue and God helped me in this way. And we read that and we say, yes, that's been my experience. And then there are psalms written, not many, there are psalms written when a child of God is going through a particularly difficult phase in his life, a particularly deep affliction, a particularly stressful time of trials, troubles, difficulties. There are a few psalms like that. There aren't many. That probably is an indication that we don't go through these trials many times in our lives, but there are times when we go through really very, very difficult times through deep, deep waters. And Psalms were written by men who were going through these phases. And this Psalm that we have before us, Psalm 6, was written at such a time. David, when he wrote this Psalm, is quite obviously going through a particularly deep trial, a particularly difficult affliction. Look at the way that he puts it. He says in verse 2, the second part of verse 2, heal me, O Lord, for my bones are troubled. My soul is greatly troubled. Turn, O Lord, deliver my life. Verse 6, I'm weary with my moaning. Every night, he says, I flood my bed with tears. I drench my couch with my weeping. My eye wastes away because of grief. It grows weak because of all my foes. He is quite evidently going through a particularly difficult time. And as I say, there are psalms written during when men are going through this period. You may want later to look at Psalm 32, Psalm 38, and those two psalms again were written at a time when the writer was going through a particularly deep affliction, especially Psalm 38. Before I look at the psalm, just a couple of points I want to make by way of introduction, by way of passing remarks, and then I will look at this psalm. The first thing I want to say, quite obviously from this psalm, is that the children of God sometimes, and I emphasize that, sometimes go through very, very, very deep afflictions. I don't think it's a common experience, which is why there are so few psalms about this. But I think it is an experience, which is why there are psalms about this. And it is a fact that as Christians, we sometimes, in the wonderful providences of God, in the merciful providences of God, we go through particularly deep trials and afflictions. That is there, and we as Christians need to have that in mind to be warned about it. The second thing I will say as a passing remark is this. It is quite obvious, all these psalms that I've quoted, Psalm 6, Psalm 32, Psalm 38, the affliction was caused by the writer's own sin. That is particularly evident in Psalm 38 and Psalm 32, where he's speaking about his own sins. But I think it is also clear from this psalm because of the way that verse 1 is written. O Lord, rebuke me not in your anger, nor discipline me in your wrath. And then he speaks about all his trials. Now, I'm not saying that these trials always come because of our sin, but I am saying this as a warning, and these psalms are there as a warning to us. When you are tempted to sin, remember sin has consequences. Sin brings enormous distress, enormous affliction in our lives. I'm not saying all afflictions are caused by sin. I'm not saying that. The Bible doesn't say that. However, the Bible does say sin does bring affliction. Sin brings consequences. There's a wonderful book called Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. And if you haven't read that book, I encourage you to get hold of it. Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices. A man called Thomas Brooks wrote that book. And he says that Satan uses different methods to tempt us. And he says one of his methods is that he displays before us the pleasures of sin and hides from us the pain of sin. He displays before our eyes the pleasures of sin and hides the pain of sin. And sin always brings pain. And sin brought distress to David here. And Psalm 32 and Psalm 38. These are penitential psalms. They're psalms of repentance. So I throw that out as a warning. Be very, very careful. If you're going to pursue a certain temptation, you're tempted by sin and you're thinking to yourself, well, God is gracious. God will forgive me. I am a saved person. My place in heaven is guaranteed. What does it matter? And I say to you, it does matter. Learn from these men that there is great anguish. There are enormous consequences in a Christian going down the road of sin. So there are these psalms that are written when children of God go through particularly deep afflictions, enormous trials in their lives. What is it that we are to do when we go through trials? What should you do? It doesn't have to be a particularly deep trial, but when you're going through an affliction, what is it that you should do? Well, I want to look at this psalm and I want to see what David did. It's a very interesting psalm because he's taking us through it and he's saying, this is what I am doing when I go through this trial. He's going through the trial. He's not out of it. He's going through it. It says there in verse 3, my soul is greatly troubled, but you, O Lord, how long? He hasn't known deliverance from it yet. He prays for deliverance, verse 4. Turn, O Lord, deliver my life. Save me for the sake of your steadfast love. So he's going through this psalm, and he has written this psalm as he goes through it. And there are instructions for us as Christians. What do we do when we go through times of trial? They don't have to be trials of our own making. What do we do when we go through periods of anxiety, periods of difficulty in our lives? Well, I want to bring out three things from this psalm, three things that we are to do in periods of trial. The first, we are to pray that our trials will benefit us spiritually. We are to pray that our trials will be of benefit to us spiritually. Do you know, this is what he's doing in verse 1. That verse 1 is a very strange verse, but that's what he's doing. In fact, it's exactly the same as Psalm 38, verse 1. He's repeated exactly word for word in Psalm 38, and it's found here in Psalm 6. And he says in verse 1, he says, O Lord, rebuke me not in your anger, nor discipline me in your wrath. You see, he's going through a difficult time. He's drenching his bed in tears. His couch is covered in his tears. He's going through this enormous trial. And he knows that the hand of God is upon him because of that, because of his sin. He knows that. He knows that he's in this trial because of the providential arrangements of God. And he is praying in verse 1. He's saying, please, will you make it the case that this is actually discipline for me? Will you please make it the case that this trial that I'm going through will discipline me in my Christian life, will teach me important spiritual lessons, will shape me, will mold me, will bring out Christian character in me, will mature me, will bring out Christian qualities in me? Will you, Lord, use this trial for that purpose? In the days when David lived, if a person committed a crime, he faced the judge, and the judge would punish him. And the punishment was laid down in the law of Moses. If you commit a crime, here is your punishment. And the judge wasn't concerned about the well-being of the person. The judge wasn't concerned about, will this punishment do any good to this person? The judge's one interest was, you've broken the law and you're to be punished, and here is your punishment. And that punishment may have hardened the person even further from God and into sin. That wasn't the judge's concern. But in David's day, and in our day, of course, there were also fathers who disciplined their children. You see the difference? A judge punishes, a father disciplines. And discipline, the father is wise in the way he disciplines, because he's not punishing, he's teaching. The son or the daughter has done some wrong, and the father disciplines, because the father wants the son or the daughter to learn, to mature, to grow by this experience. And this is what David is praying in verse 1. David is saying, treat me as a son, be a father to me. Please make sure that this period of trial is actually of benefit to me, so that it's not in your anger and in your wrath that you're doing this, but as a father who disciplines. Our trials are good for us. Our trials bring enormous benefit to us. Our trials cause us to cast ourselves upon the Lord in prayer. Our trials enable us to learn the art of prayer. Our trials strengthen our faith in God, because we have nobody else but God to go to. And we cast ourselves upon him and seek him. Our trials are good for us because they mature us. Our trials bring out Christian character in us. In the New Testament, there are two passages where it says, rejoice when you face trials. And in the book of James, it says, because your trials will bring about perseverance. And perseverance will go on to develop a Christian character. And First Peter says, rejoice when you face trials, because your trials will test your faith. Is your faith genuine? Your trials will do good to your faith. Your trials will strengthen your hold on God. They will strengthen your faith. So we are to pray this as we go through a trial, that God would use it for our benefit. Don't become bitter. Don't become angry. Don't be cast away from God. Don't run away from God. And don't turn against God and be angry with him. When you're facing a trial, be wise. Accept that it is a trial you're going through. Whether it's of your own making or not, it is a trial you're going through, and all Christians go through these trials, and pray that they will be of benefit to you. That's the first thing we are to do when we face trials. We are to pray that our trials will benefit us spiritually. Second thing we are to do when we face trials, we are to pray that God will be gracious to us. We are to pray that God will be gracious to us. That's what he does in verse 2. Verse 1, he prays that there will be benefit to him and discipline for him. And then verse 2, be gracious to me, O Lord, for I'm languishing. Heal me, O Lord, for my bones are troubled. My soul is greatly troubled. But you, O Lord, how long? Turn, O Lord, deliver my life. Save me for the sake of your steadfast love. He pleads God for mercy, for grace, and for his loving hand. Now, this is a wonderful thing, you see, because David is teaching us a very important lesson here. David is teaching us that even when we're going through trials, that doesn't mean we've lost our relationship with God. Even if God is disciplining us, if the trials have come because of our sin, that still doesn't mean that we've lost our relationship with God. He doesn't pray as a stranger. He's not saying here, Lord, I've gone away from you and I'm now cut off from you, no longer my father, and I'm asking you to become my father. He's not praying that. He knows God is gracious. He knows God is a God of love, of steadfast love. That's the word he uses there, steadfast love. And he knows God is his father. So he comes to God pleading for grace. Now in the Bible, the word grace has different meanings. And the meaning here is enabling, empowering. The writer to the Hebrews uses the word grace in this way. He says that in our times of difficulty, we are to come to the throne of grace so that we may find grace in time of need. The people to whom he was writing were under enormous persecution and were being tempted to give up on the Christian faith. They needed strengthening. Their faith needed strengthening. And so he says, you go to God for grace, and you will be given grace in time of need. And that grace will meet your needs. It will strengthen your faith. It will strengthen your resolve to follow Christ and not give up. And David is praying that here. I want you to notice the words in verse 2. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am languishing. This isn't a word meaning he's lazy. We sometimes use the word like that. They're just languishing. That's not what it means. It means he's weakened. It's actually a Hebrew word that's used in the prophecy of Nahum. And it's a word used of a river that has dried up. You know how in the desert, in the rainy season, you have a river and it's in full flood. But then the rainy season finishes and the hot season comes. And for months, there's no rain, and the river dries up completely. And that's the word David has used here. David is saying, I have dried up. I have no resources. I have nothing to refresh me. I have no strength in my own self. I'm dried up, he says. Lord, give me strength. Give me enabling. Give me grace that I may go through this period without giving up on my faith, without turning my back on you. That's what we are to do in times of trials. Times of trials can be very difficult, particularly when it's a particularly deep trial. And people can be tempted to say, well, what's the point in going on? And people can become depressed. I think David was depressed. That word languishing, it's almost like, well, I just have nothing left to give. And I'm sure you've heard this about people who are depressed. They just feel no strength at all. Waking up in the morning and getting out of bed in the morning is a huge job. Not being lazy. That is depression. And they find it difficult to do anything. Somebody says to them, why don't you do this? Why don't? And they just find it so difficult because depression does this. It saps the strength. And that's what's happened to David. This is why he uses this word used of a river that used to be in full flood, but has now dried up completely. And he says, I just have no energy, no strength. Lord, I need grace. I need you to show me your steadfast love. So the lesson we learn from David here, even when you're going through a particularly severe affliction, remember God is your Father. Remember, he is your gracious, your kind, your merciful Father. And remember that he's always gracious and always kind and always merciful to his children. Even in times of trials, his grace and his mercy is there. So ask God to be gracious to you. Ask him to give you needed strength. Don't seek strength in yourself. Don't turn to your own resources, but go to God. You feel totally weak. You feel totally unable to do anything because of the afflictions that have come. Go to God and ask him for strength. Ask him to be gracious to you. Ask him for steadfast love. Ask him to deliver you from these trials. Now, he may not do it straight away. I'll come back to that in a minute. But go to him and ask him for grace. And ask others to pray for you. We're much in need of God's grace when we face trials. So what are we to do? Well, in the first place, we are to pray that our trials will benefit us spiritually, that we will mature by them and gain enormous spiritual strength and enabling through them. Secondly, we are to pray that God will be gracious to us in our times of trials. And then thirdly and finally, we are to trust in the Lord despite our circumstances. We are to trust in the Lord despite our circumstances. Will you look at verses 8 to 10? And you notice a change in tone. Verses 1 to 7 are all about David's trials and his anguish and his praying in anguish and calling upon God. And you see the pathos in verses 1 to 7. But verses 8 to 10, the tone is completely different. It's a triumphant note now. This is almost like a different man has written this. It's a triumphant note. He suddenly speaks to people whom God has used to bring these trials upon him, because God uses people. And I don't know exactly what the historical situation was. We don't know. Was it Absalom's rebellion? Was it the nation turning against him? Was it Saul chasing him through the wilderness? We don't know. But he turns upon his enemies. He says, "Depart from me, all you workers of evil, for the Lord has heard the sound of my weeping. The Lord has heard my plea. The Lord accepts my prayer. All my enemies will be ashamed and greatly troubled. They shall turn back and be put to shame in a moment." You see this note of trust. He has come to God. He has prayed to God that his trials may do him good. He has prayed to God for grace and for steadfast love, for enabling. And he now says to himself, "God is my Father, and God is kind and compassionate and merciful and gracious. And God does hear the answers of his people, the prayers of his people. And God does answer the prayers of his people in his time and in his way, but God does answer." And so he finishes the psalm on a note of triumph, and he says, "Well, I've prayed, and God has heard. And God will now see to it. When it is wise and right in his eyes, he will grant me deliverance. But I know that he's a gracious God, merciful and kind, and he will answer." So you see, he leaves it with God. He doesn't start putting a timetable to how God is going to answer his prayer. He doesn't say, "Well, Lord, now tomorrow I want the enemies who are nearest to me to be dispersed, and then I want the rebellion in Jerusalem," or whatever the problem was, "I want that to be quelled, and then I want the next day or next week this," and he doesn't do that. He brings his trials to God, he prays that he might learn from them, he prays for grace and mercy, and he leaves it with God. Because he's wise enough to know that God is sovereign, and God will answer in his time that is best for him and for David himself. And so he leaves that with God in confidence. Are you facing a time of difficulty? Well, I think we all are. This is not an easy time in our nation today with this lockdown. But are there particular trials, are there particular anxieties in your life at the moment? Are there particular situations causing you difficulty? Well, I encourage you to follow David's example here. Remember, these are for your good. You're a child of God, and God loves you. And God is at work, transforming you daily into the image of His Son. And God is at work, preparing you for your heavenly dwelling. And God uses trials to do this work, to rub off the rough edges. And so pray that you will benefit from these trials. Pray that your faith will get stronger. Pray that your love for Him will grow stronger. Pray that you'll mature as a Christian and you'll become a stronger Christian, a more gracious person, a kinder person as a result of it. Pray for God to be gracious to you. Remember, He is gracious. Don't judge the character of God by your trials. The character of God is revealed in the Bible. So we don't read the character of God in our circumstances. We read the character of God in His Word. Don't judge God's character by your trials. He is gracious. He is loving. Turn to Him and ask Him to be gracious to you. And then trust Him. Leave it with Him. Keep praying, but leave it with Him. He will answer when it is wisest and best for you.